Welcome to the NetFront Presence. I'm Jeff Gordon, the Post-Dispatch, joined by our beat reporter, Matthew DeFranks. And this is the They May Never Lose Again edition of the NetFront. Matthew, they may never lose again.
You know, normally I would be like, I don't know. It feels like they might lose again. But Gordo, I think you may be correct in this instance that they will never lose another game here. It's funny. I show up to morning skates or to practices, and you know, usually you're brainstorming ideas and you're thinking about what you're writing that day. And I basically show up and I think, well, they're going to play good hockey and they're going to win a game. So that's the same old thing. That's just been happening for weeks and weeks now. And you know, I guess the caveat this weekend was that it wasn't the best hockey when they played Chicago and Nashville, and even at times against Vancouver. But the fact is that they are overcoming whatever mistakes they made. They are playing a solid B or C game when, you know, earlier in the season you might have needed an A game to pull out wins. And right now they're, you know, winning because they're 4 for 5 on the penalty kill yesterday against Nashville, or because Joel Hofer has gotten hot in net as a Jordan Binnington's backup, or you know, because Zach Bolduc is scoring goals, because Robert Thomas is producing. Like, there are so many different things going well for them that even when one thing doesn't go right, they have 15 other things to pick them up and move on. Like, this is a team that's played some really good hockey, and you know, as of taping today, 6 wins in a row for them.
Pretty impressive. And of course, over the weekend, they finally hit a little bit of adversity and had to use some different players. Oscar Sundquist has got the wheels that need some rest for sure. Had some illness hit the team, so the team you know, had to make some changes, and it just, you know, put Alexander Texier in. He does okay. You bring Dalibor Dvorsky. This is our new topic, so let's talk a little bit about him. He pops in for his NHL debut, and you know, although he looks, when you stand next to him, 16, 17 years old, in the game he played a grown man game out there. Just looked comfortable. Seemed fine.
Yeah, I think lost in the fact that he is a 19-year-old, you know, he's a teenager, he's in his second year in North America, you know, top prospects, number 10 pick from 2023. Lost in all of that is that he's basically been a professional for a while. He has a very professional approach to the game of hockey because of where he played and what he did before. Like, when he was drafted in 2023, I believe he'd already been playing 2 years in Sweden professionally. And so, like, when he comes over to Sudbury last year, like, he has, yeah, he'd been playing 2 years professionally in Sweden. And so when he comes over to Sudbury last year and he's treated like an 18-year-old that he is, living with a billet family. He goes from living on his own in Sweden to coming over and living with a family. And then, you know, this year, he's probably one of the youngest players in the AHL at 19 years old. He's living on his own in Springfield. Like, this is not a normal teenager. Like, he's a lot more mature for his age than a lot of other players that would be. And, you know, this is a guy who's been to 4 World Juniors. He captained Slovakia. Like, he's 19. He's a top prospect, and he's already a pro, basically. And that's what every coach that has coached him has said. And then you can see that in the way he kind of handles himself. Like, the moments didn't feel all that big for him last night. I'm sure it was slightly nerve-wracking and very exciting for him to play in his first NHL game against Nashville, but it didn't feel like he was out of place. I mean, he made some nice play on that power play goal by Texier to set up Bolduc in the slot, who finds Thomas and Texier. So yeah, I mean, it's an exciting time to be a Blues fan, just because when you think a few months ago, you're thinking about, well, will Dvorsky come up in March or April when the Blues are out of it and you want to see the kids play, right? Those are the circumstances that you might have been thinking about seeing Dvorsky in the NHL. And suddenly it's these circumstances where he's able to kind of blend in a way. Like, he's not being asked to do a lot. Like, he played, you know, 10 minutes last night, a little bit on the power play. And like, he's not being asked to save the season as it would have been maybe a month ago, where you call him up and you maybe give him second line minutes and hope that maybe they can make a push to the playoffs. Now it's they're in the push. He's playing meaningful hockey and he's not being asked to do a ton. He's playing third line minutes and playing some power play, and I think this is an ideal situation for him to be brought into right now.
Well, and there's so many. I mean, right now he's in a situation where the top two lines are going very well, and the fourth line has really become the third line. And this is the same pattern we saw when the team won the cup, when that line was so good that you end up using it, matching up quite a bit, not only to set a tempo, to start a period, to start a game, to try to stir things up, to get energy, but just to play and to do a real checking type role in terms of trying to keep the other team under wraps. That line can do that. So the third line is kind of a can be used in a very sheltered, very non I wouldn't say completely stress-free way, but three other lines going well, it makes it a lot easier for Dvorsky to come in and with a with kind of a mixed bag group have some results.
Yeah, and I think, we'll see what it looks like when Oscar Sundquist comes back in the lineup. Just quickly on him, the Blues called it maintenance, and this is the same sort of thing that he was doing early on in the season, where he would only play one half of a back-to-back, and it was just to help him recover from his knee surgery over the summer. And so this is a similar situation right now where on Saturday, the Blues weren't sure if he was even going to play, but he had to be in the lineup when Pavel Buchnevich was sick and out. So Sundquist expect to be back soon. Buchnevich, Montgomery labeled as day-to-day and with an illness. And Leddy, Nick Leddy also missed Sunday's game with what the Blues called maintenance. So that's the kind of the updates on those three guys. And when the Blues do get Sundquist and Buchnevich back, like I think it's clear Buchnevich goes right back into his role with Neighbors and Thomas. And then the questions start with the third line, right? Do you want to keep Dvorsky in there and see what he does with guys like Bolduc and Joseph? Bolduc and Joseph have seemed to create some good chemistry together. I think Bolduc and Dvorsky could have some kind of synergies with Dvorsky's puck protection, playmaking. Bolduc has some playmaking and some speed, and obviously they both can shoot the puck. So you wonder what that would look like, or if they look further down and that fourth line that's been playing so well, that was really a big part of why they beat Chicago on Saturday. You wonder if that becomes an option, or do they take someone out there? Like it's a good problem to have when they have too many forwards going, because like we mentioned earlier this season, that wasn't the case, where you would look at the lineup and you say, man, they got two fourth lines right now. Like these third and fourth lines, they basically would be a fourth line on a good team. And the second line would be a third line on a good team. Like they just didn't have guys going that way. And now, the way that they're playing right now, you look at those bottom six forwards and you're like, well, Montgomery trusts them against a lot of different guys. And like that's the way he's using them. So you do wonder what it looks like when they're healthy and when Dvorsky is potentially staying up. And then also in a week, who knows about number 81 from Minnesota, Jimmy Snuggerud, and what that looks like too.
Yeah, it's and of course they're getting a chance right now, and certainly for Dvorsky, he's coming into a team that's playing well, and he feels the vibe. And boy, this is exactly what they were hoping for—that his first taste of the NHL comes in a choppy, poorly officiated, scrappy type of a game. But hey, welcome, the team stuck together, and he got a chance to say, okay, this is what I'm coming into. Versus earlier in the year, had he come into a frustrated team that was showing some resilience but wasn't getting results. It's just an ideal scenario for however long he's here on this stint. This could be a very positive first exposure.
I think to some of these, that the milestone pictures that they take after after games, where they bring the puck in, the player holds it up, and then I think about the ones that are after losses, and it's like you have this 18-year-old rookie, he's holding up his first goal puck, and he's just stone-faced and just looks miserable. And it's like that's a picture you remember, that's a feeling that you remember for the rest of your career. Like you remember what that first goal was, where who assisted on it, who you scored on, where it was, like what the goal was, what the was feeling was like. And now, Dvorsky can have that first game and remember, yeah, I came in, we won our sixth straight game. It was a real scrappy one over Nashville, and all the guys stuck together, and I had a nice little play on a power play. And like that's a good memory to have, and that's a good way to build confidence. Even I mean, who knows how long he's up here, how much he plays when he's up here, but this will carry some sort of confidence over that, hey, that felt good. I feel good about it. The team feels good about it. And there's stuff to improve on, but there's also a nice foundation that's laid just because of the feeling in the room and how well that the Blues are playing right now.
As an added bonus for Dalibor, his dad was due to go back home to Slovakia. He was visiting him in Springfield, and out of nowhere, because of the circumstances, with the illness and injury, he gets his chance in the NHL before dad has to go back home. So his dad gets to see his son make his NHL debut, which he would not have made if he was back in Slovakia. He's no way he's making it in on one day's notice to see his son make his debut. So, and he got to see his son take his lap to start the game before the game, the pregame skate, and to get cheered for an assist that he later had rescinded. But the fans gave a big response. His dad got to see it. I mean, pretty cool on a personal level.
Yeah, and I think like the crowd this past weekend, really good. Like there were some special circumstances that happened at Enterprise, and they really delivered. Obviously, there was the Pat Maroon stuff on Saturday, him announcing his retirement after the season and playing his last game in St. Louis, and the fans deservedly gave him, all that they had in the second period tribute. After the game, his interview with Jamie Rivers, so they responded to that. And then on Sunday, like you never really know how much of a fan base pays attention to the prospects, right? And who these guys are when they're not in St. Louis. But I think for a guy like Dvorsky, who was, the highest draft pick in 15 years, the I don't want to say the savior, but like a lot of what the Blues intend to do right now hinges on him working out. Like if they miss on the number 10 pick in 2023, especially now that they seem to have moved past, like they're like, we don't need those high picks. We're trading second round picks to dump Kevin Hayes. We're getting rid of our second and thirds to offer sheet. We only have three draft picks, I think, this coming draft. Like they're moving past that phase of their retool. And so this guy is one that like has to hit because they're not going to have as many high caliber picks as he is. So knowing all of that, the Blues fans responded well. Like his rookie lap, you could hear it in the crowd, people yelling, let's go Devo. And like there was a noticeable energy there. And then for his first shift, he goes to take a faceoff in the offensive zone. They show him on the video board. Crowd gets into it, and then, as you mentioned, for the fate first point, there was that was as loud of a cheer as I've heard for a goal announcement this season, and we just witnessed Jordan Kyrou's 30th goal yesterday too. So the crowd really responded well over the weekend to Maroon on Saturday, to Dvorsky on Sunday, and I think when I looked at the attendance figures for these last three games, Vancouver, Chicago, Nashville, all three sellouts. And that's something that hasn't been as consistent this year when the Blues weren't playing as well. And so now you're going to see, more fans in the building. You're going to see a better atmosphere. And that just makes for, as we mentioned, good vibes all around.
Yeah, and I think we've talked many times on the, in the net front that that was part of why the they chose this twin track approach. You want to be good so the kids can learn the right atmosphere, but you want to be good while you're paying guys a lot of money so that people will come to the games and watch and buy tickets and not drift away. In a market this size, they couldn't afford to have a big chunk of the market start to drift away, because that's not workable, and St. Louis has to fill the building to make it as an NHL franchise. And so this has been like For Doug Armstrong to be able to give Tom Stillman this, the best of both worlds. He's getting some player development. He can see a future. You can see a path forward. And oh, by the way, they're in the chase and they're filling up the building. A gigantic win-win. When a lot of people around the league were looking at that, going, well, I'm not sure about what they're doing there, but it's paying off.
Yeah, and I think on the financial side too, you look at the relative uncertainty of the TV stuff. I mean, obviously the bankruptcy dealing is done with Bally FanDuel, but I think the team is always looking at different options. I think we see with their experiments that they're doing with Victory Plus and with KMOV and Matrix Midwest. Like it seems like they're still looking to see what's out there. And so if you have local TV that's not up in the air, but up for discussion, and you have the cap going up next year where you have to suddenly find more money to spend, when you just have to make more money to do that, you have some financial factors that come into play. And this is a well-timed run by the Blues. And it's if you're a fan, this is also fun hockey, I think, to come in and watch. You have these guys just playing hard, and that's the type of team that St. Louisans want on the ice. And the fact that they're laying their body out, blocking shots, they've had six fights in the last five games. Like that always gets the crowd going, I mean, especially when it's Nathan Walker chucking them. So you come to the rink and you're going to see, lately it's been kind of a foregone conclusion that you're going to see a good performance. Generally a good result as we've seen, and some exciting moments as well. So they're winning, and they're also providing some entertainment. They are in the entertainment business, right, Gordo?
Yeah, let's talk about a little bit more of that. Some of the excitement. Boy, Nathan Walker did land a punch. Oof. Yeah, he's willing to go. And it's as far as the game goes, as far as Sunday goes, Rich Jankowski, the team services our longtime employee, was kind of like after the game, like, hey, that was old school. And I go, yeah, old school officiating too, because that was just the sort of hapless officiating we used to see, where there was no control over anything going on out there. And the guys are just like, eh. And so the players were forced to deal with things themselves. Bit unusual. That was not a good look for the NHL. I'm guessing Doug Armstrong probably had some, I think he was headed that direction after the game to maybe have a visit with the crew, because that was just, absurd. I mean, in the old days, it just used to be like, every day you would complain about the officiating in the NHL, because it was pretty bad. Back in the days of Ron Horrible Hogarth, just god awful, lumbering, inattentive. Little Denny Murrell just totally in the tank for the Canadians. Everything, just 2-goal advantage every time for Montreal. Officer Gaharsky, I think, was actually a pretty good referee. But man, some of these guys were just horrendous. And that, I don't know who these cats were, but whoo,
Yeah,
man.
is there was a lot. There was a lot going on last night with them. You had Pachmara and Blandina on the referees, and then Gorelitz and McNamara, linesmen. So, in case you wanted to write those names down for future reference, honestly, three of them were the same officials as a Saturday against Chicago. The only difference was Blandina was part of this crew on Sunday, and he wasn't there on Saturday. So, like, yeah, there was a lot of things that the Blues could have contended with. I mean, that sequence at the end of the first period with Marcia, so like they got probably, if you counted, three or four calls incorrect, like on that sequence alone. Marcia so gets hit in the corner by Toropchenko. Clean hit. He has every right to be upset about it. I think, he goes face first into the boards. Like, it's very common you see players be upset about that sort of hit. So yeah, he gets a slash back. He gets a cross check back. He gets another slash back. At the same time, Broberg is called for tripping in front of the net when it was actually Binnington that tripped McCarron. So they missed three infractions by Marchessault on one side. They missed the correct call on Broberg at the net front, because they made that call on Binnington. Like, sure, it's a penalty, right?
Oh yeah.
And the thing is, like, Broberg is one of the guys that kills penalties for the Blues. So instead of Broberg in the box, they would have sent Dvorsky, Bolduc, someone else in there to serve that. And so that's what happens during the play. After the play, when Broberg touches up and that's the penalty that's called, Marchessault comes in late, and there's a late hit there, and then the scuffle ensues after that. So somehow the Predators ended up with a power play out of that. They scored their only goal of the game on that power play. And I think if you're the Blues, you are just overjoyed that that didn't end up mattering in the game results. The fact that they gave up a power play goal on a play that shouldn't have been a power play. And then also, like, that stuff in the start of the third period, you know, with Thomas's goal that gets waved off when, you know, we have some pretty high seats, Gordo. You and I were sitting up there last night, and we're behind the banners, you know, and from up there, we could see the puck the entire time. And I know we don't have the obstructions that the referees do in terms of seeing the puck and blowing the whistle. And once he loses sight, that's when he blows the whistle. I understand that. But Blues got a little jobbed on that one too. So those are the two ones that, you know, really could have swung the game on the scoreboard, right? That's a two goal swing right there. Then you have all the rough stuff, and I don't know. What'd you think about how they handled the Blankenberg and Thomas Bolduc situation?
Well, I think there was an attempt to injure, but as we were saying up in the press box, didn't exactly land what would have been a 5-minute kneeing penalty, right? Because he didn't quite land it. He was going for it, but he didn't get it. As far as Bolduc's reaction, yeah, I mean, he had that coming for that call. That was he. It's one thing to dump a guy, but he didn't try to cut him in half. So, I think, he totally Bolduc totally got what he deserved there, but. The problem was, and I'll actually give the officials a break on that. As much as they wanted to call 5 minutes, it wasn't there for the because the knee didn't land. There was an intent to injure. I'm not sure you can call the intent, without the real contact, and it really was a trip. So from that standpoint, it was just unfortunate. Now you could have been, well, I'll just give Bolduc 2 minutes, even though it was egregious, and call it a day. After everything else that's gone wrong, it would have been probably the call a lot of guys would have made. Just out of the circumstances of what had gone on to that point, instead of just adding another layer to the what was fast becoming a blood pressure issue for Jim Montgomery.
Yeah, and I think I was wondering this after the game, like, if that play happens in the first or second period, does Bolduc get the five in a game, or was it partially a tactic, a game control tactic by the officials to say, hey, like, this game's out of hands. We just give him five in a game, get him off the ice, we'll move on and take it up there. But I wouldn't, I mean, actually, I was going to say right now, I would be surprised if Bolduc was not fined, and they just announced it right now. He got fined $2,248.26. So the maximum allowable under the CBA. That's what he got fined for, the cross checks on Blankenberg. And when I was thinking about the discipline he would receive, you know, I look back at some of the cross checking suspensions that the Department of Player Safety has handed out. The last 14 of them were because of cross checks to the head or neck. And as you mentioned, Boldu tried to sever this guy's torso, and didn't quite didn't aim for the guillotine, right? So, yeah, the fact that he was fine, not surprising. And, you know, coincidentally, it looks a lot like the Robert Bortuzzo, you know, play on Brock Nelson. I guess it would be almost 8 years ago now in New York, when Magnus Pujarvi. There's a name, huh?
Yeah,
When
Magnus BI.
he got hit by Brock Nelson, and Bortuzzo kind of lost his mind a little bit. And you know, coincidentally, the last time a player was suspended for cross-checking that didn't have to do with a shot to the head or neck, Bobby Bortuzzo was involved. It was when he got Victor Arvidsson cross-checked him at the net front. Looked like he thought he dove or didn't deserve that, and so he gave him another shot on the lower lumbar. So the fact that Bortuzzo came up a couple times last night as I was looking at cross-checking discipline, kind of a show of where that came from. So I you know, not surprising that he got fined, and not surprising that he didn't get suspended either.
Yeah, this is a good and just on to be more on a more positive note about Bolduc, he has just continued to play well, right? He's he's making big hits. He mentioned that really nice play he made in on the power play, showing some confidence with the puck. He's not always hitting the net with his shots, but he is shooting a lot. And man, step by step, given where he was drafted, given what this team needs, giving the model that they're trying to build, this has been hugely encouraging.
And I have to double check it right now, but when I looked before his 8 goals since the Four Nations break leads all rookies in goal scoring during that time. So you take that and you combine it with the fact that he's playing, a game where you can notice him away from the puck too. Like he's finishing all of his checks. I think that was something that was conveyed to him in junior hockey by Patrick Waugh to finish his checks. It was conveyed to him by the Blues development staff to be a little harder to play against. And he's taken that and he's kind of run with it. I think you think about that hit on Seth Jones in the Winter Classic, puts him into the bench. Last night, first 3 minutes of the game, he puts Spencer Stastny into the corner boards, and a couple of Predators wanted to have a little chat with Bolduc after that, doing some slashes and some hooks. So he's showing in ways that don't show up in the score sheet. And there's also the score sheet part, right? Like 8 goals is 3 more than the next closest rookie in the league since the Four Nations break. I wouldn't be surprised to actually now see him get some Calder Trophy votes, just because the numbers are starting to get there. His underlying analytics are there. Like he's shown pretty well. Like I'm looking at the rookie leaderboard right now. He's 8th in points, and he's 3rd in goals, behind Celebrini and Mishkov. So that's a pretty solid duo to be behind. And I recognize that he is older than they are, but it's not like he's, Kaprizov a few years ago coming in at, 26 years old and winning the Calder. He's, or whatever, however old he was, he's coming in, he's playing well. And that pass on the power play to Thomas, like all three of those passes were fantastic, from Dvorsky to Bolduc to Thomas to Texier. I think I was joking that, the arena announced Dvorsky's assist, and realistically, like, Texier probably did the least out of those three to deserve a point. Bolduc, he's starting to show on his own, and even you look at his, I'm not a big plus minus guy, just because the way that the sample size is not that great when you look at goals versus shots or shot attempts and mixing situations of strengths. Like it just doesn't quite add up all the same, but I know some people still use it to evaluate players, and Bolduc is at plus 16, leads all rookies, which is also 6 ahead of Jackson Blake in Carolina, who plays on, not diminishing anything what the Blues are doing right now, but Carolina has a much stronger full season case for a better team, and Dallas with Maverick Bork is at plus 7, and he's also on a good team. So the fact that Bolduc's been able to do this, for a team that is just on the bubble of the playoff hunt, very impressive for him.
Yeah, even if he's just getting sheltered usage, to your point, and some of that could be certainly misleading. That's better than being minus 16 and just being a victim of circumstances, because at some point that does stick to you. Some of that is your fault. And in this case, I mean, he's having some good shifts. I mean, he's getting get his usages at times, to his benefit. But man, it's just a revelation. As listeners of the podcast will recall, I whined earlier. More than once about, should this guy be in the AHL trying to build his confidence? Is this really good for him to be in this scenario? Well, he powered through it, and that was now generating. Early in the season, he was playing okay, and he was doing his job and learning to play the whole game, but all over the ice. But now he's producing on top of, having that more consistent impact away from the puck.
Yeah, and I think, we can also forget like where he was at earlier this season. As you mentioned, like he was being healthy scratched by Drew Bannister and by Jim Montgomery. Like, I obviously it was a lot more during the Bannister tenure, and you're wondering, is he better off in the AHL, kind of building confidence, getting big minutes, and developing that way, or is he, is he going to stick up here? And it's like, he was healthy scratched 4 times by Montgomery. Like, it wasn't just a Bannister thing that happens. And the fact that Bolduc has taken that, he's learned, he's sat down, and I think he's done a lot of video with Claude Julien going over his games, and he's turned into basically, I mean, when Buchnevich is hurt, they turned directly to Bolduc and wanted him in that spot up on the top line because of the way he's been playing recently. So a lot of good things for Bolduc, and I think that's the other part of this season is, I think we talked at the beginning of the year, and we weren't sure whether they'd be a playoff team or not be a playoff team, or I think we wondered whether the goaltending would come back to earth after being one of the best tandems in the league last year. But we discussed what a successful year looked like for this team, right? And it was development of the prospects. If you had steps forward from Bolduc and Dvorsky and Snuggerud and Stenberg, Lindstein, Juracek, even if you want to throw Neighbors not having a sophomore slump or anything like that, if you had those sorts of things happen, and you could go into next season saying the steps were there, they were taken, and they're in a good spot, that would be a good position to be in. And I think now you look at it and you say, okay, those steps have been taken. The coaching staff has clearly figured something out at 5-on-5. They're playing fantastic hockey. They're not, last year they were winning games. This year they're playing fantastic hockey. And you can feel good about the Blues right now, the way that they're playing and who's playing well and who's developing.
Yeah, even when the Blues were struggling against the Hawks, for instance, they were just not able to advance the puck up the ice to save themselves. They were coming back, they were blocking shots, they were breaking up plays, they're back checking, and their net protection was outstanding. And eventually, they got the game turned around with the fourth line. So, yeah, it is it's impressive, man. One last thing here on the net front before we let Matthew go, it just the challenges just keep coming. This team has to keep winning. 81 points, that's great. They need to keep winning. Teams behind them keep pushing. Montreal comes to town, very similar scenario to the Blues. They're fighting for the last spot in the on the eastern side. A lot of teams in that chase. They're right there in the middle, right there in the spot. Only one regulation loss, I think, to what, the last 13 games or so. So they've been just had a nice comeback against Colorado that resulted in a shootout loss. They're playing well. They're coming to town, same stakes as the Blues, and really many similarities in trying to build a young talent base with some veterans around them and finally get over the hump.
Yeah, and they're probably a little bit ahead of where everyone would have thought they would be, right? And even them, maybe they're not as good as their record shows. I mean, they're minus 18 in goal difference. They're 24 and 27 in regulation. The Blues, they're plus 10 in goal differential. They're 27 and 28 in regulation. Like, they're in similar situations. Yeah, you're right, but there's still some differences there. And I think with the Blues and looking at their playoff position right now, today on Monday, 4 points up on Calgary. Calgary has 3 games in hand. So yeah, like, if Calgary wins those 3 games, then the Blues aren't controlling what they need to do. But the fact is that today, the Blues entered ahead of Calgary, Vancouver, Utah in points percentage, and that hasn't been the case since that win over Vancouver on Thursday. Massive win to beat the Canucks in overtime. But it was still like, oh, well, Calgary and Vancouver are still ahead of them by points percentage. And I know, that's, I mean, that could be a better predictor of how they're kind of going to finish. And so you're a little hesitant on that. And then this morning, you look at the standings and they're at a points percentage of 563. Calgary's at 558. Vancouver's 543 and Utah's at 536. And you look at the way that the Blues have been playing, and the fact that during this 6-game win streak, they've only trailed for 5 minutes and 42 seconds. That was the time in the third period against Vancouver when they fell behind by a goal. The fact that they are plus 19 in their six game win streak. There's only one stretch this season, a six game span of an NHL team being plus 20, and that was Colorado earlier this month. Like, this is some of the best hockey that's been played across the entire season, if we're looking at it honestly. And I think the other one I looked up was the Blues have 12 wins in their last 15 games. It's the 13th different season that they've done that. And in each of the previous 12, they made the playoffs. So this is a team that's playing good hockey at the right time, trending upward. And as you mentioned, going to have a test against Montreal, which was maybe not a test we anticipated when we looked at the schedule and said Anaheim, Nashville, Vancouver, Chicago, Nashville, Montreal, Nashville. That Montreal game, maybe looking at the second toughest of the bunch behind Vancouver.
And one
Maybe
last thing,
even
the net
tougher.
front.
Yeah.
One last thing, they better have a good crew for still another game between the Blues and the Predators. Because by now, this has gotten playoff serious. These teams, in terms of the irritation level between the teams, right? So they better have real, bring in a couple of A-listers to work the next game.
Yeah.
Just a suggestion to the league on that.
Yeah, you're gonna need the biggest linesman too, right? Breaking up
Oh,
a lot of
God.
scrums. And I
There's
think,
a
I think this was something that I expected out of the Kings kind of series of games as well when they played three times in 8 days. Like, there wasn't a ton of bad blood there, but this Nashville one, right? You had the McCarron hit on Buchnevich, drew the Neighbors fight. You had the Tucker hit on Evangelista, drew the Smith fight. You had Walker hitting LaRue and getting in a little scrap there. You had Bolduc's board, or I guess it wasn't called boarding, but the Predators probably thought it was in the first period. You had his cross check on Blankenberg after he tried to knee Robert Thomas. Walker and McCarron both got the 10-minute misconduct. Like, there's a lot going on that's going to be carried over into Thursday, and we'll see what kind of outcome it has. And I think the one thing with Nashville too, that building, it was so sad on Tuesday to go in there last week, and like, that building is usually just rocking. That's a great atmosphere to be in, and it was a Tuesday night in Nashville. The seats were empty. The crowd wasn't into it. They didn't even want to taunt Joel Hofer after he got scored on. I think I think the atmosphere was just sad to see as bad as it was for a place like Nashville that can really pump it up. So maybe it gets juiced up more Thursday when there's more, I guess, after the whistle stuff. But yeah, just my one thought on the Nashville atmosphere.
Yeah, I was sounding like your complaint sounds like my complaint last year about the family day
Yeah, in
at the
Chicago.
United Center in Chicago. Oh my God, where it was like the ice capades back when there were ice capades. I was like, my God. Anyways,
Well, I mean, were you longing for fights in the stands?
I just
I just want
it
more
was what
noise.
a bunch of toddlers fighting. That would have been about it. It was like bring all of your children to the game and let's pretend it's just a Chuck E. Cheese atmosphere at the game. And this was Chicago, for God's sakes. Back in the day of just the women fighting alone were spectacular. The cops dragging guys down the steep steps of Chicago Stadium with their heads banging off the steps as they get dragged by their feet down the off-duty cops getting paid by the beating. I mean, it's just, God, I was sad. And so for Smashville to be like, oh boy, like this is back in the day when the league first went to Carolina. I don't know if you saw any of those games. Oof, very quiet.
I mean, Gordo, I did grow up in Florida, so I know what a dead crowd is.
You've been to Sunrise on an off night?
I witnessed a lot of bad Panther teams.
All right. Well, that's on a happy note. That's Matthew DeFranks. I'm Jeff Gordon. Reminder that you can get all of our videos, our extra coverage, chats, podcasts, a lot of cool stuff on the digital edition of Post-Dispatch on stltoday.com. Thanks for supporting us. Until next time, for Matthew, I'm Jeff. See ya.